This is Ask Me Another, NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia. I'm Jonathan Colton, here with puzzle guru Art Chung. Now here's your host, Ophira Eisenberg.
Thank you, Jonathan. Before the break, our contestant Sam won his way to the final round at the end of the show. We'll find out a little later who he will face off against. But first, it's time to welcome our special guest. He stars as Henry McCord on Madam Secretary. Please welcome Tim Daly.
Thank you.
I want to start with how I first met you. You starred as Joe Hackett on the long-running sitcom Wings. Started in 1990, lasted 8 seasons. Okay, so I know that, you know, maybe you feel that it didn't get its due at the time because of Seinfeld and...
Cheers.
Cheers. So,
Friends. I could go on.
But, you know, Will and Grace, for example, is having a revival. Do you think Wings deserves a revival?
Well, thank you. I mean... I think it deserves to sort of its appropriate place in sitcom lore, because somebody sent me a clip from Wings the other day, and I watched it, and it was like watching another person, because it was 25 years ago, and I was watching this young man, and I thought, that guy's a really good actor. This is funny. And it was me. And I was like, wow, I used to be good. But I thought it was funny, and I actually got a little welled up watching it. So I think that it deserves to be known as one of the great sort of classic sitcoms of that era.
Yeah, so we just need to keep streaming it, keep getting the word out.
Yes. Oh, I mean, we're talking about a reunion?
Yeah,
oh,
why not?
Oh, sure, why not?
2-hour, like, Christmas holiday
special. A very special Wings.
Yeah, exactly. So now we know you as Henry McCord on Madam Secretary. I know... Yeah, that's right. See, I know a lot of women fans love the character because the character finds power sexy. But you also have a lot of guy fans that come up to you, I'm told.
It's true. I mean, I think that if you think about it, males are portrayed on TV largely, and this has gone on since, you know, the Honeymooners with Jackie Gleason, as these kind of bumbling, dreamy boobs who are totally incompetent, who have to be saved by these beautiful, you know, sort of understanding, all-knowing women. I mean, they can't do anything. They sit on the couch, they, you know, they're like scratching themselves, eating junk food and watching TV, and the woman comes in and she's hot and she goes, oh, guys, and they're like, bah. You know, they're just idiots. And I think that there are a lot of men who aren't idiots, who are competent, who can actually be left alone with a child and not be accused of damaging it or killing it, who can be left alone and not burn the house down or you know, leave it a total mess. And a lot of men come up to me and say, thank you for portraying a man who is competent and not a complete loser.
Right, like he knows where the things are in the house.
Yeah.
Just simple things.
Well, actually, in the first season, it got a little out of hand because like, by the fourth episode, I had cooked like 14 meals. And I was like, okay, like if I'm playing like a 21st century version of, you know, a housewife, I don't want to do that either.
But, right.
But I'm glad that Henry cooks.
Right, you're like, tone it down, everybody.
Yeah,
it's getting unbelievable.
Yeah, dial it down, yeah.
I imagine, you know, being on any show right now that is portraying the government, it's an interesting time to be on a show like that, even if it's fictitious, because your viewers might be watching it in a different way.
Well, listen, I think we started out thinking that we would have these wild plot lines that would get people's adrenaline going, and they would, you know, we'd go right up to the edge of them thinking, oh, that would never happen. And now we're like, oh my God, we're like the relaxing show. You know, we're like, oh, this is so nice. Look at this. Even these wild plot lines seem so calm and realistic compared to what's really going on, which is insane.
Your show's therapy.
Yes. People watch it to kind of wean themselves off of the actual news.
Yes, that's exact. And Madeleine Albright is a big fan.
She is, Madeleine. She's my White House correspondence dinner girlfriend. I met her there. I was at the White House correspondence dinner, and I at the time I was doing a television show called Private Practice.
Right.
And somebody says, meet Madeleine Albright. And Madeleine Albright, who's one of the smartest, most powerful, interesting, accomplished women I've ever met, who's about 5 feet tall, yeah, maybe, looked at me and she said, oh my God, Pete from Private Practice, you and Violet this time. But I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, whoa, what's happening? I said, you like her giving speeches and writing books and solving geopolitical crises, and you watch Private Practice? She goes, yes, my favorite show, and Pete and Violet, blah, blah, blah. It's like, she knew the plot better than I did, and I thought, this is interesting. Here's this woman who deals with all this important stuff every day, and she has her shows, and I happen to be on one of them. So we became pals, and we've spent a few White House correspondence dinners together as you know, boyfriend and girlfriend.
Is she, is she a good time?
Oh, she's a great time.
Yeah?
Actually, Bob Schieffer and Taya Leone and Madeline and I went on a double date. A couple of years ago, which is really funny because we came to this one entrance and there's little Madeline, you know, being very charming and sweet, and we wanted to go in the entrance. And there was a Secret Service guy who was like, they want to go in the entrance. They're not allowed. And she said, I'm sorry, you have to move on. And Madeline suddenly went from 5 feet tall to like 1,000 foot. Like she said, I am Madeline Albright. I am the Secretary of State. We will be driving through this. And all these Secret Service guys were like, okay, come on in, come on in. So it was like, yeah, you don't want to get on her bad side, let's put it that way.
Nice. Now, your sister Tyne Daly and you are...
Is Tyne Daly my sister?
I believe so.
This is what I get. It's like 35 years. She's my sister, people. Tell your friends.
What do they usually think?
They have no idea. They're like, really? Tyne Daly's your sister? Yeah, she has been for 60 years.
Oh, they're like, you know Tyne Daly?
Do they say that?
Okay, okay. Well, yes, she's your sister.
She's my sister, yes.
And you guys have worked together a little bit, but you have a new play coming out that is written just for the two of you in mind.
Yes. Teresa Rebeck, who is a fantastic and prolific playwright. Yes, thank you. I did a play of hers at a little theater in Vermont called the Dorset Theater Festival a couple of years ago. And she kind of liked me, and she said, oh, we got to work again together. And I said, why don't you write a play for Tyne and me? And she did. She wrote a play for us.
You're like, oh, I didn't expect you would take me seriously.
And Tyne and I have never appeared on stage together, so this summer at the Dorset Theater Festival, we are appearing in this world premiere of a Teresa Rebeck play called Downstairs.
Yes.
Brother and sister.
Whoa! That's fantastic. Now, I feel like you do a lot of things, but you in your acting career between high school and college took some time off and sold and installed floor tiles?
I had a floor tiling company, the Silver Dollar Tile Company. We would install a silver dollar in every floor that we laid. my father was remodeling this house, right, in Los Angeles, and he hired me as a laborer, and I was sort of apprenticing with this carpenter, and I met these Mexican guys who taught me how to do tiling. And they sent me and my friend down to Mexico to pick up some tile. We met this guy who called himself El Primo. And El Primo had a deal with the border guards, right? So we made this deal with him, and he shipped us like 30,000 square feet of that beautiful terracotta floor tile to LA, and we didn't have to pay any tariff. So we could charge like 250% profit on every tile and be 30 cents a tile under the going price. So that's how the Silver Dollar Tile Company.
And it was very successful, but basically you used up all the stock and then abandoned the trade?
There was no stock. There was beer. We used up all the beer, and then we disbanded and did other things.
Excellent. I think that is a perfect business model, by the way.
Yeah.
On top of everything else, you've been the voice of Superman, the animated version of Superman.
I have.
Okay, so we have a game right up your alley.
Oh, God.
Were you a Superman fan as a kid, or were you Batman or Hulk or something?
No, you know what? I like Superman.
Yeah.
I mean, Batman is so dark, and he's gotten so dark that it's just really depressing. But I did see the Lego movie. I like that Batman was better. He was kind of cute.
Okay, so this is perfect. I'm going to name a comic book character and describe the character's superpower. You just have to tell me if it's a character that actually appeared in multiple comic books or if we just made it up.
Okay.
Okay. And if you do well enough, Nick Wester of San Jose, California, will win an Ask Me Another Rubik's Cube.
Whoa.
I know. Think about it.
That's big.
Here's your first one. The Clock King. His only power, extreme punctuality. Is that real or fake?
That is false.
It sounds like it could be false. But it's real.
Damn.
But I said that with so much conviction.
I know.
Does that
I know.
Count for anything?
I know, right?
Sorry, Nick. Jeez, you're okay. The Clock King?
He's a villain, clearly. He was born William Tockman.
His nickname was Tick, obviously. Yeah. Tick Tockman.
Tick Tockman. He's very precise about time, carries a pocket watch, or wears a very expensive wristwatch. How about Matter, as in M-A-T-T-E-R, Matter Eater Lad. He can eat anything. That's it.
I'm going to say that's true.
Yeah, that's
yes.
a real comic book character.
I was that kid. I was Eater Lad or
you,
whatever.
Yeah, you ate all Matter?
That's going to be my epitaph. He was a good eater.
That's a really good quality. That's going to get you through the apocalypse. How about Arm Fall Off Boy? He can detach any of his own limbs and use them like clubs to defeat criminals.
That's the hardest one. I'm going to say true.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he tried to enlist in the Legion of Superheroes, but he was rejected. I actually didn't know there were storylines like that where they applied, but they don't get in. Like
yeah,
Yale
like,
or something like that.
What do you do with a superpower if you're not... If you reject it, you become a villain, right?
I imagine.
It's your only choice.
Yeah. How about Angst Boy? His supercharged teen hormones create black holes that suck in his enemies.
I want to do the voice of Angst Boy. I don't know. I think that's false.
It is false.
Okay.
It is false. I mean real in life, but false yeah. as a superhero. All right, this is your last clue. The Red Bee. He's an assistant district attorney in Oregon who secretly fights crime with his trained bumblebee, Michael, who lives in a container on his belt.
All right, look, I was almost going to say true until you said Oregon. They don't really need superheroes there. They're just chilling. I'm going to say false.
I'm sorry, he's real.
What?
Yeah.
Read that again. What does he do? Bumblebee lives on his belt?
Yes, and the bumblebee's name is Michael, which I kind
Michael?
Of love.
That's like naming a dog John.
Exactly.
You can't do that. John.
He fights Nazis with a bunch of trained bees, but Michael... is his favorite bee.
Okay, I thought you said superheroes. Not super creepy guys.
Yeah, super creepy guy, I know. Congratulations, Tim. You did well enough that Nick Wester is going to get an Ask Me Another Rubik's Cube.
Nick, congratulations.
You can see Tim on the CBS series Madam Secretary. Give it up for our special guest, Tim Daly.